Sion 180, coming up in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Be bold. Take risks. Lead by example. Believe in your power. Say what you feel, mean what you say. Join me at Sion 180 on this journey of discovery and advancement.
Hello, and welcome to Sion 180. I'm your host, Leslie Ann Sion. This podcast is all about igniting conversations and empowering lives with real talk, real people, and real change. With over 20 episodes across 4 seasons, we have featured inspiring voices from the Caribbean and the diaspora, diving into topics like health, politics, the arts, finance, and many more topics that truly matter to our community. I invite you to check out my website at sion180.com or your favorite podcast platform to catch our latest episodes, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram for updates, advice, and engaging discussions. Today, I'll be chatting with Dr. Hazel Dabrio. The topic, cutting the cord, the long-term impact of helicopter parenting. Hazel is a Canadian scholar practitioner of Grenadian birth and Indigenous ancestry. She has co-authored several academic texts and numerous articles on child sexual abuse in the Caribbean and on a variety of psychological subjects. She is a graduate of a master's degree program in depth psychology, adult education, and art history. Her PhD is in psychotherapeutic counseling, and she is a professor of psychology at the St. George's University. Her current research interests include the neuroscience of trauma and the philosophy of cultural psychiatry. She is the co-founder and director of Sweetwater Foundation, and her current book, Psychosis, Spirit Possession, and Child Sexual Abuse, A Jungian Depth and Liberation Psychology Perspective, is to be launched very soon. Good morning and welcome, Hazel.
Good morning, Leslie Ann. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us this Sunday morning.
Bright and early to do this, right?
Bright and early to do this, but it's lovely sunshine. So I'm sure our listeners and viewers in the diaspora facing that wintry weather would be jealous.
They'll be jealous because it's a great day.
It is a great day indeed. So thank you for taking the time off to have this little chat on this very interesting topic, cutting the cord, the long-term impact of helicopter parenting. And as usual, I like to begin by asking our guests to sort of define what is helicopter parenting and what are some of its common characteristics.
Right. Well, if I may begin by giving a sort of general framework.
Yes.
Just the good parts of it.
Right.
The very bad parts of it, and then something in the middle, so that we have a general idea before getting yes. into the details, because, young lady, I know you're coming with detailed questions for me later on. So,
thank you for putting it all in perspective.
Oh, my goodness. So, on the good side, you know, we speak of helicopter parenting as though we are trying to prevent children from failing. And I don't like using the word failing in that respect, because the example generally given is that, you know, children learning to walk and learning to run, they have to fall down.
Yes.
And if you don't allow them to fail in the falling down, then they never learn how to run properly, much less become a football star and all of that.
Yeah.
But if you speak of falling down as a failure, it sets it up too negatively, because you're supposed to fall down. In that case, it's not a failure at all. It is your normal expected milestone that you're coming to and crossing. And you have to fall down, or there's no opportunity to learn to get up. So in that respect, I'm just asking us to be conscious of the language that we use around how we understand our role as parents, because the things that look as though they're going wrong, It's not a failure. It's normal. Right. And it is just for us to get to it in an appropriate way. So that said, don't forget the role of a mentor, right? We know that a mentor is something we all need. Yeah. And mentors have chosen professions that put us in the role of a mentor at every stage of life, from the time you're in secondary school, perhaps, and you need an after-school tutor because you're a little behind in math and physics, or you need some extra coaching at university and into married life, you need a counselor from time to time and so on. We always need a mentor. We must be able to reach out for a mentor and trust on their guidance. Yeah. And if you see parents in the role of, well, the first mentors for us, then one very expected and important role for a parent is to be there, to be present, to give advice, to give counsel, to help the child through, right? I think we know that. But it's just to make the point that the function of an advisor in someone's life is a good, noble, strong, and necessary function to have. Yes. Where that can go wrong is where, and when it becomes bad, is when a sort of contentious conflict for dominance gets set up in that relationship. For example, if you look at archetypal psychology, which looks at typical roles in all culture, and you look at the role of the teacher, mentor, teacher, you know that one is to help, right?
Yeah.
But what may happen is, the teacher may reach a point where the students are doing so well under her tutelage or his tutelage that the teacher becomes a little worried that the student's going to know more than them and maybe take over. And so the teacher begins to suppress the student, oppress the student, that they never reach that that ability to dominate and take over, to conquer the one who is meant to have the position of privilege, right? And parents may do that as well. Who do you think you're talking to? You know no more than I do. I was doing such and such long before you were born. And there is a point at which we sit back and we revel in their success. And there's another sort of a thing that begins to eat at us when they put us in our place. We don't take that too well. And even if it is not spoken, and it usually is not spoken, it usually is something that sort of creeps into the shadow, the parent makes moves to ensure that the child just never knows enough or gets too successful, so that situation of dependence is kept. I'm the parent around here, my house, my rules, and you want to keep everybody down.
Yeah, parents know better all the time.
Parents know better all the time. Yeah. So, When parents come to counseling with their kids, you can see this in play a lot if there is a conflict between them, where the parent may take on the position of needing to win because they think that is their parental role.
Right.
So if there's a discussion with a child, it's not an argument, it's just a discussion where points of view, I mean, say the child is studying philosophy now, or talking about a preference for dinner, the parent does not engage in a way that welcomes new ideas, fleshes them out, and gives the child back, okay, well, I am not sure I agree with you, and I would probably do it differently, but good point, good point. I like the way you argue. I love the way you debate. The parent may prefer surreptitiously to just crush that, right? So that's the bad side of taking over your child's life, hovering helicoptering in order to ensure that they don't get too ahead of themselves. You know, in the Caribbean, we have that saying of crabs in a barrel.
Yes.
Each one will climb on the other one to be able to get out. Mm-hmm. And yes, and psychology knows that sometimes when you begin to act differently from the rest of your family, everybody's a doctor, you want to be an artist. They will do what they can to change your mind. Yes. Because nobody wants your offspring or your sibling to get too far away from them. What's going to happen? They're going to go away. I had a client the other day whose child got an amazing opportunity to do an amazing job in Silicon Valley, I thought. Mm-hmm. And she came in tears. Oh my God, the next thing you know, he's going to be going on the shuttle to the moon, and then what's going to happen?
Right.
So she was not in support of the move because, it's the ultimate sort of ridiculous fear that my son is going to go to the moon.
Right, right.
So the parent that helicopters with a view to keeping things down there while I fly above, because this is how I keep my due diligence done, my control over my household and things in order, is perhaps invariably going to keep the kid from reaching their height and yes. from reaching their potential.
Yes, and that's something, Hazel, that I think Caribbean parents don't really understand. Now that topics like parenting and styles of parenting are becoming examined and scrutinized, and all sorts of explanations, psychological and otherwise, are being given. I mean, we knew you do as you were told, so to speak, or else there is a consequence. I think that in contemporary times, children feel that they should have the latitude to express their beliefs, to express an opinion. And sometimes what you find is what they call overparenting, parents trying to intervene in every decision, trying to monitor every action of the children, and not allow them to maybe even resolve conflict by themselves. That's part of the negative effects of that type of helicopter parenting, would you
Definitely.
Say?
Absolutely, that is one of the negative effects. Though I put it sort of in the medium range, but it nevertheless is very significant. I forget the term you just used, but I liked it because I'm reminded of simple things that happen. Oh my gosh, I'm saying simple things that happen in a life. I'm talking about hurricanes. That's my example. It's by no means a simple thing. But if you are living a somewhat successful life, you have all your stuff, and then there is a climate change disaster. And this is pertinent because climate change disasters are upon us.
Yes.
You look at a disaster having passed. Everything is in disarray. Everything is destroyed. We know as psychologists who work in climate change, when you go into a population to give support, some will seem to be on their feet, maybe having lost everything, but they'll be able to say, oh my God, let's think about what to do now. But yes. there'll be another segment of the population that is just sitting under a tree without a clue what step to take next. Mm-hmm. Guarantee you that the ones who are walking or running around saying, okay, call the insurance, need to rebuild, where is their water, are the children who have been allowed to quote unquote fall down and fail, because they've yes. learned problem solving skills. That's and right. the way you learn problem solving skills is not, as parents may think, is not to abandon your child to the child's own devices in a way that says, well, you think you're so man, figure it out for yourself, but rather to engage with the child. So the child says, I'm really worried about my exam coming up. And your response could be, it in a good way, I understand that you're worried. I would be worried too. So what are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. Right? So let's work it out together. What are you going to do about it? So when you face your mentor, you would say, okay, I have this problem. I've worked it through in this way. I think this is a working solution, but may I ask for your ideas? Here is somebody who has learned to problem solve on their own, but also to make use of the assistance that's there in the culture for them. No man is an island. You're not expecting kids to be fully independent of everything all the time. That's just not a possibility.
Yes.
So you want to engage, you want to teach how to think for yourself, how to do for yourself, but also reach out when you have a problem that you can solve. And working in the field of mental health, of course. And one of our biggest problems in any demographic is that people would just stay and suffer in silence, go through all kinds of torment and hell because they feel ashamed to ask for help.
Right. Yep. That's very typical.
It's very typical. And the helicoptering parent is one parent who would have left you with the message that neither can you do it on your own. You need me to figure out all your problems for you. And the other, the shadow side of that is to say, but if I'm not here, you're done. Yeah. It doesn't point to helicopter parenting, doesn't point to, well, go have a chat with the principal or go talk to the coach. The helicopter parenting is really a completely narcissistic position because it says, I am the only one in your life that can ever do anything for you. It is entirely selfish and narcissistic. So, So since I'm calling it that, what makes that narcissism come through in the parent?
Yes, what's the motivation behind that?
Yes. So it could be either, I say a good or a bad thing. It could be that the parent has suffered their own trauma. And generally, when someone is under a narcissistic wound and enacting it on their children, it would be because they have been hurt themselves somewhere in the past. And this is the best they can do. They don't think they're doing anything harmful. They think they're doing, if I think about what happened to me when I was a child, I'm not going to let that happen to my children. Actually, see yourself as a hero. So you jump in there and nobody's going to keep you from defending your children and protecting yourself, your children, and you give yourself applause for that. You plan the next move and the next move.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing you say, Hazel, is that the parent should not really try to supplant their dominant beliefs and advice and recommendations on the child all of the time, but at least allow the child to share with the parent or engage and come up with their own ideas, their own decisions, so that they have some input into it, so that when they become adults, they've gone through this process before of figuring out things on their own, yes, with help, but at least they're able to make, you know, decisions on their own, so they're not victims of overparenting, because that's really the concern today. Are we overparenting by intervening in every single aspect of their lives?
But you see, the overparenting leads to isolation, and it does not lead to community building. Remember, the overparenting is saying, I'm the only one who knows you, I'm your mother. Yeah. I brought you into this world. I know you better than you know yourself. Let me tell you what we're going to do in this situation. Right. So if we're talking about anything that befalls us, we go on a kayaking trip and the weather turns out so badly, we have to, but what do we do? In a group, you would have to look at one another and say, what do you think? Okay, can you do this? And here's the community banding together to solve a problem. But the child who's been helicoptered has been raised to be more individualist and to not reach out for help from a neighbor or a friend, or to not offer assistance to a neighbor or a friend. It's a very isolating paradigm because you're just fully focused on the one parent that only allows you to do what they said.
So what's the short-term effects of this on children? And now I'm addressing young children because you mentioned the word that they are raised in this way. So you're raising this young child to be completely dependent on your guidance and your beliefs and your role as parent. What's the short-term effects for them as they move into teenage and even young adulthood? There must be some psychological impact.
Well, it's more than psychological. It's psychological and it's psychosocial as well. For example, you just become a really boring person to everybody around you.
Yeah.
You want to go to a movie or should we go to the beach? I don't know. You decide. Okay, we're going for dinner. Chinese or Italian? I don't know. You decide. Come on. In 2 minutes, you just want to get away from this person.
Yeah.
So you're leaving them without a good friendship community. And that's a sad and awful thing to raise a child to be. Right? You just want to get home because there might be a school shooting or somebody might molest you. Because you're filled with all the things that could go wrong in your world. So you become fearful, you become anxious.
You
become paranoid.
Yes.
You know, the generalized anxiety disorder is one where you sit there and you're just scared. If you look at yourself, you're scared all the time. But what is it that you fear will happen? You cannot name it. Because you've been raised in the situation, well, you better get home to mom because who knows what's going on out there? Well, what's going on out there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have problems in the world, to be sure, more than I've ever faced in my lifetime. But look, here's an opportunity to solve some problems, to think about things, get outside the box. And you know where that generally happens? When parents, instead of dropping off your child at music lessons, nothing wrong with music lessons, I think they should, but instead of dropping them off at guides and brownies, nothing wrong with guides and brownies. It's a difference between a parent saying, hey, let's go hiking with me on Sunday. Mom and I going hiking, let's go. And off you go together. To scrape your knees together, to fall off the waterfall together, to lose the food together. And there it becomes an adventure where life is full of these things. Oh God, you don't know what happened.
Yeah.
But you see it like a storytelling.
Yeah.
Don't forget that in traditional cultures, there were various stages in a life where a child, an adolescent, a young adult, and so on, would be put to face some tests that involved, I don't know what to think of, fire and water and the elements and a battle for your survival. And you'd have to know how to win.
Where would you get food from?
This, that, and the other. Wonderful life experiences that are, that contribute to the richness of a child's life because they have been done with family, or at least in the yard with neighbors' children and so on.
That's right.
But you're not cosseted inside, left with devices, afraid of the world. So you escape depression, because there's nothing to depress you. If you have a problem, you tell everybody, hey, problem over here. And everybody solves it and moves on to the next person's.
Yes.
Then if you actually do have a medical emergency or a mental health emergency later in life, you know very well how to pick yourself up and go to get it solved. What if you lost your job and the bank wants to come and take your house? These are problems you face as an adult in the long term. And if you've been helicoptered, you'll sit there and not know how to do it. Therefore, you take a dive off a skyscraper. Remember in one of those Great Depressions, we saw people taking headers off the skyscrapers, could not figure out how to come out of their problem. And the problems are real. So what we would do as parents is put the children to face some challenges. Stand back and see how they do. Of course, you're ready there to help because you don't want them to break apart.
Right.
But you are training their capacity for solving problems.
Self-governance and autonomy.
Self-governance and autonomy. I wanted to mention a couple of things that mitigate against parents being independent, teaching their children independence. And three things I thought of were law, the economy, and trauma within the parents themselves. And the first in law, this is something I've seen in my own practice. If you are facing a custody battle because there's an imminent divorce, and what's the rate of divorce? It used to be 1 in 3. I'm not sure where it is now. Maybe high.
1 in 2 now. It's higher.
And it's higher.
Yes.
So if you are in the position of facing a custody battle, you know you have to be on your children because you want to please the judge. You cannot risk losing your children because a judge decides that the other parent is better. So you put a strategy of helicoptering in place and you start documenting it. And this may go on for years. And understand that it is a matter of trying to keep your children. Who could blame a parent for that? But meanwhile, the consequence of that on the child, who is now a toddler or maybe an adolescent or something, is that they're learning this fear. They're learning this attitude of what I do with myself, with my thoughts and my decisions, is to please an external force. That's the reason for the breakfast on time, the clubs after work, such and such and such, nothing to do with the joy of life.
So but using it as a strategic tool almost.
You're using
control.
It as a strategic tool for control so that you look good. And social media will do the same thing to you. You want to look good, particularly if you have a narcissistic bent. And we have the phrases in the community. How could you go outside like that? Oh my God, you made me so ashamed. Oh my God, I'm so ashamed of you. Did you let people see you like that? Don't tell them you're my child. How often have we said that to our children? How yes. often has it been said to us? And we laugh it off. But if it becomes too intense and if it is a matter of course, then you take away the autonomy of the child, right? So there are systems that are enshrined in our society that make parents feel they have to enforce certain behaviors and choices in their children, and the children best behave.
So what's the advice for parents, Hazel, in that regard, those three key factors that you mentioned? What advice can we give parents?
To take a step back, right. Just take a step back. Because if a parent says, you know, I'm afraid of the teachers bullying my child, or worse, you understand that fear, and the fears are real. So you do protective things, but protective things are a shade removed from dominance, aggression. The parent becomes a bully themselves, and the parent begins to rob and steal any sense of esteem and autonomy from the child. There is definitely a boundary that you cross.
So is that step back associated with the age of the child, the stage of development, the level of education, or how is that step back sort of managed and directed effectively by the parent?
Can I speak to one other thing you just said? You said yes. Education, level of education.
Yes.
So I want to name that as one of the things that our culture does to force us to be more aggressive parents than perhaps we would like. One was in the case of custody battles. Right. The next one is with education and the economy. So now many more of us are gaining graduate degrees. Yes. And even postgraduate degrees. and the higher the level of education that we gain, we expect that we get a higher paying job, right? And now the child who has got 5 university degrees is ostensibly best able to look after themselves and best able to look after the parent when the parent gets old and infirm. So we start with that, you know, how some parents will register their child in all the schools up to the end, up front, pay the fees up front, join all the prestigious clubs because you want this for whatever reason. If we're looking at a situation where money is important and the parent is saying, "Do you know how much money I paid for this education for you? Do you know how much your private school is costing me?"
Yes.
Sit and do your homework.
Right.
Don't get up until I tell you to get up.
Yes. It's a typical response.
It's a typical response. And we wouldn't say that's helicopter parenting. We would say that's good parenting. But no, the child is likely to be sitting there in a gloomy funk and going, "Well, who asked you to go to private school?
Right.
Who asked you to just suffocate me with all these things that you're apparently giving me for their benefit, but I feel like I'm dying?"
Yes. Is that mollycoddling or just being a dominant parent?
Again, you know, I hesitate to put titles on it.
Right.
Because can you blame a parent for wanting their child's education?
Not at all. You want the best.
You want the best, but I mean, it's a loose phrase. Take a step back. Because you have to allow the child to fail an exam if they won't study. You have to. Next time they won't make the same mistake again. You have to allow a child to problem solve for their own. Because when, at the end of it, what will you be putting out into the world? Okay, a child who has letters and a child who has book learning, but common sense will be nil.
Yes.
Relationship building will be nil.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into the creation of a well-functioning, whole, well-balanced child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not rocket science for parents to have a conversation with each other. How can we ensure that our child is coming along with enough rough and tumbling and smoking weed or whatever it is, and staying on the straight and narrow, so that they turn out to be a decent human being? I was talking to someone the other day who grew up in South America, and she was one of about 15 children in a poor family who survived by farming, and there were acres and acres that they owned. So that's richness of a type, but really that was their full wealth. So the children had to meet up, she said, 3 o'clock in the morning, walking to the farm, and there were animals and there's crop, and then you have to pick rice and whatever you do with rice, and that was the family's economy. So how would you tell those parents, "Don't, you're over-parenting, the children have no time to play"? This is why I say that economy has a lot to do with our choices in that regard. Whether we have enough money as parents to say, "We're providing you with the highest education, do not waste our investment. You go become that doctor." Or if it is, as happens in rural areas or used to be a part of our early tradition for all of us, you have 14, 15 children because you're going to helicopter them into developing that farm because it's your only means of survival. And it's the only means for you of care as you get old. So helicopter parenting are not this weird group of misbehaving adults who are trying to make overachieving children. Every one of us has a bit of the helicopter in us because we know that we are selfishly, we want our child to be seen as, "Well, have you seen Hazel Dabrio's children? Wow, those girls." And you know, you feel a sense of pride. You want that. You can't say you don't want that. But
yeah.
Step back take one little step back to ensure that they are following the route that they want to follow towards their well-rounded success in life.
It's very important. I really like the way you ended that bit of advice, because I think what we wanted to have taken away from this episode is suggestions and advice for both parent and children, and that includes children who are adults, as they too try to navigate through this very delicate parent-child relationship, particularly in these contemporary times. It certainly is not like long ago, Hazel. As I said at the beginning, where you did as you were told, there are so many more dynamics that are involved in this process. Any sort of final thoughts you think you can share with us for empowering the adult child who might have come through this type of helicopter parenting environment throughout their childhood?
Well, it's just looking back at the role of the mentor again. Many of us may be able to point to, and it's usually a teacher. For me, it was a teacher. When my family was getting too overbearing, there was generally a teacher who, that I disclosed, you know, the whole thing, but that the teacher would say, you look a little dumb today, or you didn't do as well on that test, or somebody, you know, there's usually somebody who sees you, who recognizes that something is amiss. And so we need to encourage community, friendships, responsibility for one another, the real function of the village, the way a village is meant to grow and support and see. A teacher that you can go to and complain about your mother. And we need people to do that with somebody. So I guess it's to cultivate safe relationships for our children so that they know and they feel within themselves, you know, I need to speak to Auntie so-and-so. Or can you drop me off by Granny? Because I just want to hang out with Granny today. Yeah. The help is there. It's nothing that we have to manufacture or buy. The village functions if we will give it a chance, and if we don't think ourselves superior to it, right? Remember that things begin with the parent most of the time. If a parent brings me a child in therapeutic practice to say, this child, blah, 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 this child, I end up working with the parent first. Because what is it about you? What is it that you need to keep the child indoors like this?
Yes.
Keep the child dependent on you like this. Child can't even decide if they want to open a can of tuna or a can of salmon today.
Yeah.
What do you think, Mom? I don't know. Ask my mom. And one of the unfortunate results of that is if the child grows up with a sense of entitlement, and the sense of entitlement is burdensome to the child, because if you join a new school or make a new group of friends and you walk in the way you were raised, expecting everybody to jump to it and see about you, you'll soon get a rude shock.
Rude awakening.
Yes. A rude awakening, and that's not pleasant for anybody to have to go through. And then, if you find yourself going through it, people are saying you're spoiled, you're entitled, who the hell do you think you are, where the hell do you come from? Because your peers will be quick to let you know and put you in your place. If you don't have problem-solving skills, then again, you would lack the capacity to self-reflect and say, you know, geez, I came on too strong there.
Yes.
Geez, I need to pull back a step. Because you've never seen your parents pull back a step.
Yep.
You've never seen your parents concede up. You have a better point than me. Let's do it your way. You've never witnessed that. How are you going to do it? And you think you've made your child able to win debates at school because they won't give in. They're going to win at whatever cost.
Cost.
The personal life, when you need a little more tenderness in your intimate relationships, if there's a young marriage, the young bride of helicopter parenting may just fail to frankly use that word in all of its connotations at an intimate relationship because they haven't really learned much of anything.
I think we've barely scratched the surface of this topic, Hazel.
Oh, there's a lot to talk about.
I know, and time has gone on us. I see production waving to me, yes.
Oh my gosh.
That look, 30 minutes
I have
just...
pages and pages to go.
Well, we have to come back for round two. Before we blink, it's gone. Time doesn't wait.
No.
But there's some very important takeaways from your discussion, Hazel. And certainly the stepping back is one. Secondly, you know, it takes a village to grow up a child and children. And third, that, you know, helicopter parenting is not all that bad, but we do need to manage it. So I want to thank you so much for offering your expertise and your advice and your information regarding this topic. I think we need to approach it again because there were some points that you raised which I would love to have indulged in some more depth because
sure.
I can tell the information is pertinent to the audience. But Hazel, thank you so much for joining me this morning on Sion 180.
I entirely my pleasure. Thanks for
us. Beautiful day and a great year ahead. Thanks.
Same to you.
Thank you, Hayes.
Okay, bye for now.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Once again, I want to thank Dr. Hazel Dabrio for that very enlightening encounter, cutting the cord, the long-term effect of helicopter parenting. To our audience, thank you for being with us on this podcast, Sion 180. This is season 5 in 2025. As we continue to learn from our community of professionals who have graced our platform, please don't forget to hit us up on your social media platforms. We do love hearing from you. Tune in again next Sunday for another episode or check us out anytime on YouTube and on Sion180.com for all current and past episodes. This is Sion 180. Bye for now.